I'd be able to look around better if I wasn't under a blanket. Hi, I'm Lizzie Flux.
And I'm Ben McKenzie.
And this is, well, is it Pratchett, Ben?
Well, no, it's Oot Club. It's Oot Club, Liz. The Pratchett Oot Club, which we haven't made for a little while. It's nice to be back doing it.
Yeah, and it's our first one remotely. We did our first remote episode last week, and now we're doing our first remote Oot Club.
Yeah. And I think it went pretty well. How do you feel about our first remote episode?
Yeah, I think it went really well. It's strange not being able to make eye contact, and I feel like it's even more strange this time around because I'm sure you can't see it or hear it, but I am under a blanket to get the sound quality as good as possible.
Oh, this is a time-honored home recording tradition. So welcome. The traditional podcasting style, and I love it. It's great.
Is it traditional for your cat to try and burst in while you're doing your sound check, or is that just a me thing?
Surely it must be. Is Asimov there now with you?
I don't know, because I took his collar off and now he's all stealthy, so he could be literally anywhere.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. He's become, once again, a Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, and he's wandering around naked now. So, like, that's very rude.
That's, well, I mean, you know, in these weird times, I think a lot of people are doing that at home.
It brings him comfort, then he should.
Yeah. Has he turned up on any, have you had any work meetings like on Skype or Zoom or something? And has he turned up in those?
I think a better question is, are there any work meetings I've had where he hasn't turned up?
Yes. I feel very left out. Like, I'm having all these meetings and I don't have any children or animals to turn up in the background. So I think Toby's just going to start turning up.
Or we could get you a cat.
Or a lizard. Housemate would like that. The fish might not like it. Oh, a lizard.
Yeah.
I do like lizards. We had a lizard lived in my backyard when I was a kid for quite a while.
Did it have a name?
Yeah. I think, well, there were a couple, actually. There was a bearded dragon, and I can't remember. What did we call that? It did have a name, and I can't remember what it was called.
I'd have called it Bluebeard.
We didn't. Oh, that is a good name. We didn't actually catch them or anything. They just lived in our backyard and we'd, you know, occasionally feed them or say hello. And there was a blue tongue lizard, which I think we just called Bluey, which was the name of my first teddy bear as well. So
was your first teddy bear a lizard?
No.
It wasn't actually a teddy bear, it was just a lizard that just came everywhere with you.
Oh, now that makes a lot more, you know, people did used to look at me weirdly when that was not true. No. That would be a cool story though.
It would, absolutely. You should start just retconning it. Just make that the story.
Yeah. And also, like, my just for the record, too, my use of the name Bluey predates the animated dog cartoon, which everyone thinks is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
It is great. And I don't even have kids, and I'm like, this is great. I can definitely watch a bunch of this.
Well, people have been saying this to me, and I sort of would like to see it, but I feel a bit weird watching it by myself.
Now do it.
Okay. Someone did say recently that there was an episode that covered some particular, and I can't remember, I think it was either a philosophical or scientific concept and explained it really well. And I was like, oh, now I have to watch it. And I can't even remember what it was. So I'll...
You just have to watch all of it. So,
Oh, yeah, until I find it. I guess that's true. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'll do that. Shout out to LJ, who was the person who tipped me off about that episode, although I don't remember what was in it. So I'm going to check it out anyway.
So should we move on to the next part before I run out of oxygen in my weird blanket bunker?
Yes, let's do that. We don't want any emergencies if we can avoid them.
If I go silent, I'm call an ambulance to my house.
Well, we thought for this episode of Oot Club, we thought it might be nice for us to discuss some of the other books that we've been reading, because we have occasionally mentioned other books. And, you know, there are 75 or so Terry Pratchett books, so you could just read those over and over again, but there are also,
I thought,
lots
you were going to say there's like 75 or so non-Terry Pratchett authors.
I'm pretty sure it's maybe a little more than that, would you say?
80?
Yeah, at least 80. Right. Maybe a few
over
more.
Time, like across the history of the written word.
Yeah. But we thought, we'd discuss what we've been reading this year, because we haven't really talked about that very much. So Liz, you read a lot more than me. I'm very, very envious of your speed at which you read. But you've read heaps of stuff already this year, I'm sure.
Yeah, it slowed down a little bit in the last few weeks, and that is 100% because I accidentally got really into playing Mortal Kombat. But before that,
which one? The new one? Mortal Kombat.
The new one, yeah.
11. Is it 11? Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah, it's like XL, so I think it's like 10, but I've got like a weird one. I don't know, but it's really fun, and I've played way too much of it.
Oh, okay. Who's your favorite character?
I really like Melina because she's just very good at all different types of attacks, but I've been learning how to play Tanya as well.
Oh. So. Now, Tanya, I think I vaguely remember, but I haven't played it in a long time, and I don't know if Melina was a character when I used to play. What's...
She actually was a swappable skin for Kitana, so because there was very few female characters. So Melina is actually in the lore, which I've also been reading up on because, of course, I have. She is a clone of Melina, but a messed up clone, and that's why she likes to eat faces.
Oh, that's creepy. But
the actual origins are there was just Kitana, and if you wanted a pink Kitana, that later turned into Melina.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. That's weird. I mean, they did, the series is famous for its reuse of models of characters. I mean, you know, Scorpion and Sub-Zero and there are a couple other ones they added later on all have the exact same ninja outfit in different colors.
In this one, there's this really fun costume set where it's called the cosplay set and they all dress up as each other and that's really funny.
Oh, they always like to have fun with it. I'm still amazed that there's so much story in those games.
There's too much story. I'm like, it doesn't need it. I just want to punch someone a bunch of times. Like, I don't need to know about like their family history.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever played Super Smash Brothers, the Nintendo one?
Yeah, only recreationally, not seriously.
not professionally, just for fun. Yeah, okay, fair
enough.
Other
people's houses.
I do really enjoy a bit of Smash Brothers. I have played the newest one, Smash Brothers Ultimate, which came out, I think it was last year, or maybe the year before, for the Switch. It's pretty great because it's just a bunch of characters you know from other games.
Huh, yeah.
Just fighting each other. And that,
Olimar.
Like, and there's who?
Isn't he the one who has like the trailer little Pikmin and he throws them at people?
Oh, yeah, I've never played Pikmin, so I didn't know his name. But yes, he is in it in some way. I don't know if you can play him. I might not have unlocked him. I should get back to it. I haven't unlocked all the characters yet. But there's some great stuff because they've got some crossover with other companies as well. So like Sonic the Hedgehog is a playable character in it, which is great. And Pac-Man. And there's some cool characters in there. It's really good.
But we were talking about books, and I have been reading as well as playing way too much Mortal Kombat. And I've been
and
one of the things I've been reading the most.
Digital faces.
Yeah, and also like weird internal organs. You know, the whole thing. But Agatha Christie is a thing I've been reading quite a lot of recently because that's something I turn to in between books most of the time. Like I'm in any given year, I'll probably read at least 5 Agatha Christie books, if not more.
Yeah.
Because I just love them. She's endlessly entertaining and just that mind. But
So
at the moment I'm reading some Agatha Christie books and I just finished reading Sherl by Wayne Marshall, which is a collection of short stories that I first read when I was judging the Unpublished Manuscript Award for the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. And now it's been published as a book and it's evolved quite a lot since then, even though I absolutely loved it in its first incarnation. It's been really cool seeing what's changed, what's stayed the same, what's been added. So, yeah, that's also a really good one.
Yeah, cool. We've talked about your love of Poirot on the podcast before. Is that what you're reading? Are they Poirot mysteries or are they different Agatha Christie's?
I've been reading some Marple ones at the moment. And there was this great one called The 13 Problems, which is basically 13 short stories where a group of people gather together to solve, like, they're basically armchair detectives and each of them has to put forward a mystery that they know from their own lives or that one degree remove, and it's all these just really 1930s characters, and they always forget about Miss Marple and assume she won't be good at solving things because she's an old lady who likes to knit. And it's the first Marple book, I'm pretty sure, and it's been really...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see how firm a grasp Agatha Christie had of Miss Marple as a character from the beginning. And it's also just a hell of an introduction because each story could pretty much be its own book, and it just shows that her brain was constantly sparking off ideas that she was like, no, that can be a short story. I'll have more ideas. That's fine.
That's cool. I dig it.
Yeah.
The other one that you mentioned, the short stories, what kind of genre is that?
It's kind of hard to put, because we've got so much cultural cringe here. I really struggle to say Australiana, but that is kind of what they are. They're surreal Australian stories. Like my favorite one that I always mention is like 2 pages long. And it's just about this small town where a shark shows up in the local swimming pool and everyone's just like, oh, yeah, hey, Bruce, how are you going?
Right.
And it's just like bizarre, surreal Australian life, like satirized. And it's kind of its own thing. So it's hard to sum up what it is, but it is just a pure, silly, but with depth, joy.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds great.
I think you'd really like it.
Okay. All right. I'll have to check it out. I will.
There's one book called A Year. There was one story called A Year Without Football. And yeah, it's very good.
Oh, wow. Okay. That also sounds good.
Yeah. And topical.
Yeah. Look, I feel I've been also not reading quite as much. But in my case, yes, partly it's because I've been playing video games, mostly Animal Crossing New Horizons, which for those of you not familiar with it, my housemate and I have referred to it as a capitalism simulator. Because you play a cute little sort of caricature human on an island full of little anthropomorphic animals who are also very cute. And then you start off with a tent and you get a home loan and build your own home and you have to pay it off and then buy lots of things to put in it and make it cute, but also help the island sort of develop an economy and thrive.
Oh my God, that's so much less fun than it looks like from afar.
I mean, it is a lot of fun. Like the sort of economic engine stuff is pretty much on the back burner. A lot of people playing it now are veterans of the game, so they've been waiting for this new one to come out. It's been like 8 years or something since the last proper game in the series, and so they've been mad keen for it, and they're all really into it, so they're pushing themselves really hard. You know, everybody I know playing it is making sure that they've got all the upgrades to their house and that they've planted all the things and
harvest the
fruits. But you can spend, well, yeah, you do harvest the fruits, you go and sell them on other islands, but also you can play the stork market. This is a real thing. You buy onions, sorry, not onions. I always say onions. You buy turnips from a turnip seller, and then the price of the turnips goes up and down during the week, and you try and sell them before they rot at the end of the week for the highest price you can get for them.
You say that's a real turnip for the books whenever you do that?
Yes. It is. Oh, no. I mean, it's full of puns already. You would love the puns in this game, because every time you catch a fish, because you can catch fish and you catch them alive, and then you put them in an aquarium in the museum, and you can catch bugs as well, and you put them alive in an insect exhibit in the museum. And every time you catch one, there's a little pun about what it is or a little joke. And one of my favorite early ones is you catch a red dragonfly, and your character says, "I caught a red dragonfly. I didn't even have to roll for initiative." And it's like a Dungeons and Dragons joke. I'm like, I didn't expect that in my Animal Crossing. This is great.
Well, please don't sell this game to me. I will get way too into it if I start playing. Like, as I've told you, I got way too into Mortal Kombat, which is literally a game where you just punch each other until one of you faints. So, and like Dragon Veil, I got really into. And the whole point of that is you put dragons in the thing and you get more dragons. And I played that for like 2 years. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, you would fall down a rabbit hole for Animal Crossing. Anyway, so that's one of the reasons I haven't been reading so much. Another reason I've been catching up on audio. So I've been listening to a lot of Big Finish, who are a company in the UK. I've been listening to a lot of their Doctor Who audios. They do a whole bunch of audio adventures. At the moment, I've been listening to Doom Coalition, which is this Eighth Doctor one. So I won't go on about too much about that, because we know what happens when I talk too much about Doctor Who.
Yeah, everyone gets drunk from the drinking game.
Which is probably not so great right at the moment, so let's not do that. But I have been reading. I've been finally catching up on a few things that I wanted to read. I read the newest Rivers of London book by Ben Aronovich, which is a novella called The October Man, which is set in Germany. So hello, Sven, our most famous German listener, who you'll hear maybe a bit from later on. You might enjoy that.
Oh, you definitely enjoy. I enjoyed that. So yeah.
It was very good, yeah. But also, I finally sort of read the end of a couple of series at the start of the year. So I finished off the Illuminae Files, the last book in that, Obsidio. And I read Prison Corp, the last book in Marley Jane Ward's Welcome to Orphan Corp series. And I read The Secret Commonwealth, which is the second book in the Book of Dust trilogy, a sort of sequel to His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman. And wow, it's real good. So they've all been really great. And right now I'm rereading Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman. And I'm only a little bit of the way into it, but I have already seen some stuff and noticed some things in it that are clearly Pratchett influenced, if not references. Like, he uses the term white knowledge, which means it's sort of like the knowledge equivalent of white noise, stuff that you learn without actively seeking to learn it. It just sort of seeps into you from the culture. And that's a Pratchettism. So I've just noticed a couple little things like that in it, rereading it. And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying rereading it.
It's very cool.
I'm also trying to finish off a couple of books I started ages ago and haven't finished. One of which actually is quite topical because our next episode of Pratchett that we're recording after this is the one about The Long Earth, which is a co-authored book with Stephen Baxter. And I've been reading one of Stephen Baxter's books. It's his sequel to War of the Worlds, which is called The Massacre of Mankind. But it's quite a hefty tome, and it's written very much in the style of the original. So it's quite, I don't want to say wordy, but it is quite dense. You know, it really sort of paints a picture of the world and has a lot of detail. And if I'm honest, I found it a little hard to sort of get momentum going with it. I've been reading it sort of in little chunks, and then I've taken quite a break from it. But I'm keen to finish it, so I will get back to it at some point.
Sounds like you could do with a short story collection, because I think at the moment my brain's not been able to do things for long periods of time. So short story collections have been great because you can read an entire story and then put it down and then come back to the same sort of world. So it's the best of two different things.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe I should get into some short stories.
Might I recommend Agatha Christie?
You may recommend it. Maybe I will check it out. I have read...
It's time, Ben.
I have read a Christie, but it's been quite a while.
It's been quite a while.
It's been... Yes. And I can't remember which one it was. So,
well, their titles change as well. So, like, even if you remember it, that might not be its actual current title, because sometimes you think you bought two different Agatha Christie books, but actually one is the re-release under a different publisher.
Right, with a different name.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, I expect, why they might rename them.
Yeah, and sometimes they refer to the publisher in the text. Like in one of the books I was reading, they're like, oh, and a man over there was wearing a Trilby hat and reading a Fontana book. And then I flicked to the cover and it was a Fontana book. And I was like, that is cheeky.
Yeah. Do you think she wrote it with like a little placeholder that said publisher name? and then whoever publishes it is allowed to change the name of the publisher?
I feel that's the sticky note from an editor that goes in there and is like, oh, we're just going to add in an extra level of detail here if that's cool. Rather, like there's no descriptor there other than the hat and sitting there.
Could be the case.
Hmm.
Have you got anything you're excited about reading that you haven't started yet?
Quite a lot of things. I've been buying a lot of books lately because because a lot of Australian authors have had their book tours cancelled in light of all of this. There's actually just a huge amount of books that I've got waiting in my pile, and now I have the great but stressful problem of what one do I read next, because there's a bunch that I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
There's The Adversary by Ronnie Scott, which looks really good. There's After the Count by Stephanie Convery, who was a guest, like our second ever guest, I think, actually. Mm. They're on my to-be-read pile. I've also got, this is not by an Australian author, obviously, I've also got White Noise by Don DeLillo waiting to be read because it was recommended to me last year, and so I got a copy. And so I'd be able to look around better if I wasn't under a blanket. And there's also Where the Truth Lies by Corinna Gilmore. There's just so many books that I'm excited about.
Yeah, cool.
That I've got. And now I think I'm going to have to just like put on, or maybe just like stack them up next to me, get the blanket up again, and then just grab one at random. Yeah.
That sounds good. Sounds good.
It sounds dangerous as well, but you know.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Look, there's no reward without risk, Liz.
Yeah, you make a good point.
Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to reading Claire Coleman's Terra Nullius because I bought a copy recently. So that's on my to-read
pile. Oh, awesome.
I haven't read it yet. So
we can talk about it.
Yeah, I'm real keen to read it. I've heard nothing but good things. All right, so that's what we're reading or have been reading or will be reading. We'd love to know what you've been reading, so why don't you let us know? If you've got recommendations for things you think we'd like, we won't have time to read them, but we'll take them into account anyway.
Add them to the stack.
Yeah, we'll add them to the stack. Oh, I should say, you know, the other thing I've been reading have been short stories by children, because that's part of my job at 100 Story Building. I've been reading those stories on the internet, which has been an interesting experience. Some of them I hadn't read before, and I'd forgotten how dark kids like to write.
There's a lot of murders and haunted houses and ghosts and murdering ghosts and ghosts that murder in haunted houses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like it's a horror show. And I read the Choose Your Own Adventure in the latest book from our Early Harvest program, which is called The Sound of the Dark, which has got a theme of like spooky horror. And we had a couple of people who had to stop listening to the live stream because they got too freaked out. And I was like, oh, no. I think they're a little bit younger than our normal target audience, but still, that was, it was quite an eye-opener.
Good review.
Yeah, a good review. Yeah. It was definitely scary. Yeah. All right. Well, look, we also would like to answer a couple of questions, which we always like to do. And we've got a couple left from one of our longtime listeners and supporters, Stuart Lord, who has sent us in quite a lovely list of them. And we've been trying to get through them all. And I think these are the last two. I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, we'll double check to make sure, but we think we're at the end of them.
We think we've answered them all. So the first one is, was the book you've enjoyed rereading the most so far been as expected or as a surprise to you? So, I mean, this is hard, like, to pick the one you've enjoyed rereading the most in the first place. But do you have one, Liz?
It's hard to pick one, but I think perhaps Pyramids, because I couldn't remember it pretty much at all, to the point where I was like, have I read this before? But I know that I have, but I really enjoyed it. I'd forgotten pretty much everything, but it has the camels, it has the assassin's school, has a whole bunch of, it's all set in this world that we never get to see again. So
yeah.
It was kind of a delight to visit there for a short period of time. So yeah, that was a surprise to me.
That was a surprise, yeah. I think mine was a surprise too, because as much as I've really loved rereading a lot of them, some of the ones that I knew were my favorites, I did really enjoy rereading. But I think the one that was really surprised to me was Feet of Clay, because I just didn't remember the details of the mystery that well. So the solution was a surprise and the specifics of the plot. And I just, you know, and it's a bunch of my favorite characters. And I just, yeah, I think that one, I think that was the one I've enjoyed rereading the most. It's not necessarily my favorite that we've reread, but it's the one that I enjoyed the most because it was such a pleasant surprise. And The Last Continent, it probably gets an honorable mention, I think, too, because there was so little of it that I remembered that rereading it was quite a joy and a surprise as well.
Men at Arms is one that I knew that I loved, and then I reread it and I was like, yes, I do love this. So that one wasn't a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. So the other question from Stuart is there any particular part of his work that you wished you had created?
Now, I'm pretty sure we haven't answered this question, but I'm going to say that as a caveat, because I'm not 100% sure, but perhaps our answer has changed even if we have.
Oh, it's just such a tough one to answer. And it feels familiar. Like, I feel like I've answered it before, but my answer would change depending on what day you get me on, because he's done so many original things.
Yeah.
But now we're also so familiar, it's hard to distinguish what got you most excited when you first read it. Do you go on a character level? Like, I wish I could have created someone like Moise von Lippwig or Vimes. Do you go with the way he does language? Like, how he makes voice distinguishable by using italics or by pauses or full stops in the wrong spots or by using caps or different fonts. But I think if there's any one character I wish I could have created from all of it, it would be Death, because we're so used to Terry Pratchett's Death now, but it's actually just such an original, well-done character, because Death has never been portrayed like that before. And it's hard to make Death a lovable character that you want to see more of.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You're right, though. There's so many things that there's so many different ways you can answer this question. Death is definitely a good pick, though. I salute you for that one. I don't know. I really like his take on trolls. I really like his take on witches. I kind of feel like, I don't know, like a comedy fantasy universe just in general. But I think particularly the way that Ankh-Morpork ends up being this melting pot of all these different elements that work together is just such a great setting and such an opportunity to tell so many different stories. And I kind of wish I had invented it. I kind of wish I'd done comedy Dungeons and Dragons as a novel series. Like, you know, like that's, I think that's where I end up, because it's just so good. But I can't narrow it down more than that. I'm gonna go away and have a bit more of a think about that one, Stuart. And if I come up with a better answer, I will try and bring it back on a future episode.
As one scene that sticks with me, though, there's the one at the Patrician's Palace. We're pretty sure it's not veterinary, where they're doing a conga line, and in the conga line is a swamp dragon. That's a pretty strong image that I wish I'd created.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. It's hard to imagine how that would work. I mean, they're so small.
And so volatile. Like, it's the conga line with extra danger.
Yeah, kicking them seems like the worst possible thing you could do. Or asking them to
kick. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right.
It's like Russian roulette, but conga with the swamp dragon.
Yeah.
I couldn't come up with a good alliterative thing.
Well, look, you know, it's difficult, isn't it?
Danger Dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's bad. Sorry.
No.
Sorry to everyone.
It's fine. It's fine. So those are the questions we've got now. Remember, if you're a subscriber and you're listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. This is your opportunity to ask us any old question you like. It can be Pratchett-related. It can be broader books-related. As long as it's not too personal, we'll have a go at answering it and probably end up on a bit of a tangent like we just did. But we do love hearing from all of you and all of our listeners, which kind of brings us to the other thing that we wanted to include this episode, because we got a pod card from the lovely Sven Uckermann from Germany. And Sven advises us that this is a tradition in Germany among podcasters that they send each other little audio messages that they can include in their podcasts. And he sent us one, and he sent us one, this was last year, so it's a little while ago, but it's kind of evergreen content because he decided to explain to us some of the particular peculiarities of Pratchett being published in Germany, which is fascinating. Like, this is something I never thought I would learn about, let alone firsthand from someone in Germany. I don't know about you, Liz. I was delighted by this.
Can I just say that I would absolutely go to Sven's TED Talk if he did one about probably anything, because he explained it so delightfully. And it's a topic that I also had not thought about, and I feel like I've learned a lot from it, and it's given me a lot to think about. It's probably going to change how I read the books from now on as well.
Yeah. If you've listened to the whole back catalogue of our episodes, you might remember we did include a little snippet of this as a footnote in a previous episode, but we thought we'd play the whole thing here for you, our Oot Club listeners. So please enjoy this podcast from Sven Uckermann.
Hello, dear Elizabeth and Ben. Greetings from Germany. Sven here, Sven Uckermann from Kiel. In the German podcast community, there is the nice tradition of sending podcasts. So audio comments or audio snippets from one podcast to the other. And since I have my own silly German podcast about engineering problems, I thought I will try with my engineering degree to explain you some German translation problems, which are quite apparent in the Witches books and in the Watchmen books. So in the last book and in the upcoming book, they are quite obvious. So I thought, well, let's try to explain it. So my German teacher and my English teachers would be giggling if they knew that I will try to explain some grammar problems in English. So the Terry Pratchett translations in Germany had a similar, quite interesting stories to them themselves. So before 1989, Terry Pratchett was just a nobody author. So they just sent it out to everybody who just wanted to translate it as nothing really special. From 1989 to 2007, there was his main translator, Andreas Brandhorst, who himself nowadays is actually also a fantasy author. But Terry was more seen as, let's say, a kid's author. So it was translated in a kid's way. So for example, in the Witches books, you have in the last book, in The Masquerade, which is in German Mummenschanz, which is more a theatrical way to say something is masqueraded, you have this bit where Granny talks to Death, also my favorite joke there with a chiropractic on his bones, about the sucrose and water. In Germany, they translated it into a type of sweets in German. So like, if you go to a doctor, you get like a piece of sweets. So they dumped down the jokes in a way. And a lot of Terry's puns are untranslatable, which is funny in itself, because in some German books, actually, the translator has his own footnotes. Like, that's an untranslatable joke. Sorry for that. Couldn't do that. Or stuff like that. So you get another meta level into Terry's works because you have another layer of footnotes under his footnotes explaining some footnotes with other footnotes, which makes it funny in itself. And also in this time, you had this famous Maggi Soup advert because firstly, he was with the publisher Heine, which was one of the, or is still today one of the biggest, especially in fantasy and sci-fi. He is really big publisher here. And they, in 94, he switched to Goldman because there was like a big advert in the books for Maggi, which is an instant soup type of deal. Because there was like in Pyramids or Sorcery, there was just like, yeah, in between, Lord Vitinari wanted a snack. And he has like a two-page spread where the text suddenly switches over to an advert, and underneath you have a little advert. Because, yeah, back then the books were cheap. Yeah, it's a cheap fantasy novel. Nobody wants to buy them, so we need some advertising money. You know, that's the thing. Back in the, you know, cheap kids' books back in the days had just adverts in them to make them even cheaper so the kids could buy them. And it, after a while, you know, people started to notice, hey, wait a minute, Terry Pratchett is actually quite an adult author. So in 2000, after 2010, between 2007 and 2010, there was like different translators thing, and quite, yeah, a mess. And after that, Gerald Jung, who is also a member of the German Terry Pratchett fan club, started to translate them. And in that books, there you have a big shift. Also, you have a different cover. You know, you have in the old versions, you have this normal, yeah, let's say the same covers, Kidby or Kirby, depending on the year. In the old versions, you have just the normal covers as you know them. And now the rights are in another publishing house. So they have other different type of covers now. They have like really cheap computer graphics and stuff like that. You may have seen them on my Twitter account. By the way, if you really like cool Terry Pratchett covers, look for the French editions. They have the best covers ever. Some of the older books now are retranslated in the new translation style I will talk about a little bit later. And depending on the right situation, you now have three different versions of the same book in the bookstores. You have Piper, who has the rights for the old stuff with Andreas Brandhorst's translation with the old covers. Then they have like the new released versions with newer spelling, but the same old translation with newer covers, which are cartoony style. And then you have the ones translated by Gerald Jung, with most of them in computer graphics or stuff like that on the title. And the Gerald Jung versions are quite nice because they have the TV distinction in it. Most Latin languages have this TV from Tu and Vos. So you have more or less three different modes of speaking in most languages. You have your family, which, you know, you are familiar with them. So you have, or friends and stuff like that, you have a way of addressing them. In German, it's du, which is like, hey, yeah, hey, buddy, how it's going? And the pronoun you're using is du, which is also the way you talk to little children or, yeah, stuff like that. Then you have sie, which is the way you talk to your superiors or to people who are foreign to you, or you're not in a first name basis. So if you use du, you use your first name. So in my case, it would be, hey, du, Sven, how it's going? And if you don't know me, it would be in Germany, you start with the Z level, which is like, oh, Herr Uckermann, nice to meet you. You know, you are on a formal level. So that's the second level. And then you have the level which we don't use any longer, more or less, in Germany, which is talking to a royal person or a really high-standing person, which, funnily, is the one thing in English survived, but I think also just because you have this little family in these parks living in small houses, you know, and wearing funny headgear. Yeah, so basically the Z version in the German version is not there because they translated it for children. So everybody is on the first name basis in the old translations, which is quite strange. Because the U of the English version, which could be like the level of first name basis or last name basis, was all translated into first name base. So you have Sergeant Colin, being on a first name basis with Lord Veterinary, which in a 80s kids fantasy book was totally normal. Even like all the other fantasy books were like this way because it's dumbed down for children, you know, who cares? But then you lose a lot of the humor because like in Feats of Clay, Fred suddenly talks to Sam Vimes in a formal way with like, yes, sir, blah, blah, blah. Yes, sir, you have a visitor here, sir. You know, and he's like, hey, you with your buddies, you know, you don't need to talk like that to me. Or also, you lose a lot of humor. Also in German language, the humor is often based on grammar, you know, like if you are with one person in one level and the other level. Because in Germany, you have also some different levels in between. You know, when you have a boss who is really formal, but you have like an American company where everybody's on a first name basis, you get a doozy, which is like, yeah, he might use the first name, like Thomas, please be so kind, sir, to fetch me that and that, and using formal speech while using the first name. Or you get the doozy in the other way around, where it's like, yeah, in the company, it's strictly forbidden on a first to be on a first name basis, you know, like being in a government office or stuff like that. So it's always like, oh yeah, Herr Müller, könntest du bitte, Frau so-and-so, könntest du bitte, which is like, they are on a, from the name base, they are on a formal level, but hey, they are working together for like 15 years and yeah, being on a first name basis, obviously, but the company policy forbids that. So the same also, you get it in the military and stuff like that, where you have to be formal, but yeah, in reality, you're really on a first name basis. And in the Watch books, in the new translation, you get a lot of jokes in this way, where Nobby or Fred would switch, depending on the situation, they would switch the language, which you have in the English books based on the accents. Terry would write like different, I think, regional accents in the English language, which of course, you know, I miss a lot when I read them in the English version, or also the translator missed a lot of that. But in the new translation, you have this play between different types of addressing a person. So like when Sam is really in his role as Sir Samuel Vimes, commander of the Welch, everybody is like, yes, sir, have you seen that? And having using the Z version of the speech, so the formal speech. And when he is like with the old Watch guys, like they were together with the dragon, they switch a lot into the do version, so in the informal speech. So actually it's quite interesting to read all the three versions next to each other, which takes a lot of time. So yeah, something for your podcast. At least I have a lot to do in my spare time. So because in the 80s kids version, you get a dumbed down version. And in the new translation, you get other jokes and other humor than in the original text, because they play a little bit with the different types of speech and how to address people. Yeah, and in Terry's version, you actually learn a little bit about rural language of Great Britain, which was not a topic in my English lessons, as you might have heard about my very good sound and accent from the German. Yeah, beware, the Germans are coming. Yeah, sorry for that. So have a nice day. Thanks a lot for the good podcast and looking forward for the next episode. Greetings from Germany, Sven. Till the next time.
So thank you to Sven for sending through that podcard, because first of all, I did not know that podcards were a thing, and also just what a great topic that we would not have been able to tackle on our own. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Now, I've been thinking about this quite a lot. I wanted to answer a few of the points that he brought up. First of all, just so everybody knows, definitely licorice is a thing outside of Germany.
It shouldn't be. It's horrible.
Well, I like some kinds of licorice. I always thought I hated it, but then I realized that I actually quite like it. But I've got quite a sweet tooth, so I like the sweeter sorts of licorice and some of the flavored licorices.
Oh, so you like the licorice that tastes least like licorice?
I like it to taste like licorice. I just like it to also be a bit on the sweet side, you know?
I think as a child, the way I described it was it looks like and tastes like car tires.
That's so, it's so mean.
Mean to licorice? Like, licorice deserves to be mean to.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I haven't actually eaten it for like 20 years. It's probably delicious, and I'm going to try it, and I'm going to have to eat my words and also about a bucket of licorice because I'll probably love it by the time
I tell you what,
I try it again.
Next time we record together in person, I'm going to bring a bag of good licorice and you can try just a little bit. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But, you know, we'll give it
it's going to be like Rincewind all over again. I'll be like, it's terrible. But I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, thank you to Sven for his tip off about the French edition covers. I did go and look those up some time ago, and I think we mentioned them in the podcast. But if not, do yourself a favor, Google them, because, wow, they're amazing. Totally different take on what the Discworld might look like and all the characters and stuff. And it's, yeah, they're really beautiful.
I think the thing that I took away most from that, and I know it was one of the first things mentioned, but it came back around near the end, was how it had been translated as though for children. And I hadn't thought about how different that could make a book, like, because translation is a huge art. I was lucky enough to have one of my works translated recently into Indonesian.
Oh, wow.
And I got great questions from the translator who was assigned to me over things that didn't translate well, like even the title, because my story was called One's Company, and we had to come up with a different title for it in Indonesian because it was a riff off Two's Company, Three's a Crowd, which is not a phrase that exists in Indonesian. So we had to find an equivalent phrase to make a title out of, which I thought was just a really fascinating thing. And it's just all little tiny details that translators deserve a lot more credit than they get, because they have, it's just problem solving, and it is their own unique work by the end of it, because different brains process different things differently. Yeah, translation is an art that if it's done well, it's invisible. It's like editing.
Yeah. And look, extra points for anyone attempting to translate comedy as well, because particularly something like Terry Pratchett, where there's so much wordplay. I mean, Sven went into this, but I was looking up some of the German titles for Discworld books, and you lose a lot of puns even just in the titles. Like Equal Rights in German translation is, and I apologize in advance for my horrendous German pronunciation because I have only ever learned a tiny amount of German, but Das Erbe des, no, that's not how you pronounce it at all, but it translates to The Wizard's Legacy. I'm not even going to try and say it in German. I feel like it would be an insult to Sven, who speaks English so well. And I am one of those people who's very monolingual. I've tried learning French, and I will try some more now to learn some German. But yeah, so it's The Wizard's Legacy. There's no pun there, and it doesn't even hint that maybe it's about witches and women being wizards. But I think my favorite one, because there's so many, my favorite one is the translation in German of thud is not called thud. It's called klonk. But also in Dutch, it's called bam. So I'm just like, oh, I love this. Like every culture, every language has got their own onomatopoeia for that sound. And they're ones that we would use as well, but in different contexts. And it's just that little nuance that I really enjoyed.
I love the idea of the translator putting in their own footnotes, being like, there's a joke here, but it does not translate to German. So I'm sorry, but it's funny, but we can't do it. Sorry.
Oh, having to explain a joke because you can't put it into your own language, that must be heartbreaking, but at least you get the context of it. Well, look, I think that's all we've got time for this episode. Liz, it's been a pleasure.
It's been great. I'm glad that the cat didn't burst in again, so good job all around.
I think the audience will be quite disappointed they didn't get a visit from Asimov, but that's all right. Maybe next time, because there will be a next time. We'll try and get another one of these out before too long. We know it's been a bit of a gap since the last episode, but we'll try and get a couple more out a little more regularly over the next little while. So thanks for joining us. As always, thank you for supporting us. And please send us in your questions. If you want to send them via email, remember our email address is chat@pratchettpodcast.com. You can also send them on the Discord if you are on the Discord for Pratchett. And if you are on neither of those things, or you're just sick of emails, and who isn't, you can send them via social media if you like. Use the hashtag PratchettOokClub. And you do need to put Pratchett in there because someone else has also come up with the same idea and is using Ook Club for their reread of Pratchett.
How dare they?
And actually, well, look, I think the other thing I did want to mention, actually, is this brings this up for me. There are now about 4 or 5 other podcasts doing rereads of Pratchett. When we started this, there was only one, which was Radio Morpork. who are a bit sporadic, shall we say, in their releases, but they're quite delightful. A couple of Irish folks. They're a lot of fun. I recently listened to their last Continent episode because I try not to listen to anyone else's opinions before we record our own. But there's now several others, including The Truth Shall Make Ye Fret. I found another new one, which has only started up recently. So there's been, I think, three or four that have started since we began. I don't want to say we're the inspiration for that, but we're the inspiration for that. Are we? Do you think we are? I mean, there's not that many. Look, let's be real, everyone. Like, we love all of you. There's not that many of you. There's maybe, there's potentially 60 people who might listen to this, but there's maybe 1,500 people maximum who listen to the podcast, which is a great number. Don't get us wrong. But
I think you're forgetting that I'm very, very competitive and you're this close to setting me off on a Jet Li style The One mission.
Okay. All right. So if you want to check out the other ones, yes, there's Radio More Pork. They're the sporadic one. The Truth Shall Make You Fret. Now, they come out weekly, but what they do is they do 3 weeks of the same book and then they have a week off and then they do 3 weeks of the next book. So
that's very cool.
And they've been going since November 2019. So they'll take a while to catch up to us, but and they might not actually, but because they're doing roughly one a month. So that means they probably were behind us. But so that's The Truth Shall Make Ye Fret, hosted by Joanna Hagen-Young and Francine Carroll. I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, but I'm quite interested in it. The other one that I know about is The Complete Discography, which is four nerds with some occasional special guests. That started in January 2020 and it comes out sometimes fortnightly, sometimes not quite on time, but that's okay. They're working it out. It's their first podcast. And they're also hoping to cover the Watch TV series when it comes out. And actually, maybe we should ask the listeners, do you want us to talk about The Watch? I mean, I think we should stick with doing the books, but maybe we can do like a little side project where we talk about the TV show.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let us know what you think, listeners. Do check out some of those other podcasts. If you do, let us know what you think about them. We'd love to hear your opinions. There's at least one or two others that I only recently discovered that I think are also very new. Most of the other ones, though, and I've noticed this is pretty consistent, are only reading the Discworld books. So I'm glad we're doing the other books because, as you will know if you've listened to any of our episodes about them, some of those are among my favorite of Pratchett's stuff. So, yeah, I'm keen. All right. Well, I think that's it from us for this episode.
Yeah, I think that's all for now, but more very soon.
Yeah. So until we talk to you again on Ood Club, please stay safe, look after yourselves, and do send us some questions and say hello. We love to hear from you.